calling on her phone. I've got no time to be alone. Someone coming at me all the time. You better think I lose my mind. Cause I'm stranded on my own. Stranded far from home. All right. This is Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music and Talk Show. You're on CITR 101.9 right now. This is a show all about Australian and Canadian music and that great classic in the background, The Saints, I'm Stranded, which is what this show is named after. And thanks for your patience last week. We were not on air due to some fantastic programming related to the orientation week here. It's the first week of student life here on campus for this semester. So I think they played some live music last week. So if you're tuning in, I'm sure you didn't. I'm sure you experienced something equally as interesting as what you may hear on this show. And I do my best to play interesting music for you. Music that I know of from my home country, where I grew up, that you may not know about just because there's just so much music in the world. And I take great pleasure in kind of playing older bands that, yeah, very much underrated and, you know, deserve more acclaim than what they had, I suppose. But, you know, things happen, including the career of this band called Asteroid B612. Fabulous hard rock band, kind of in the style of the Detroit rock and roll sound, the MC5, that kind of thing. They actually named themselves after a Sonic Rendezvous band song, I believe, or a lyric. So I'll tell you a bit about them soon, but actually I should mention we have some great interviews this week because we're right in the midst of the Vancouver Fringe Festival. It's a 30th anniversary, and I assisted this week on another show called The Arts Report, which is on Wednesday. I gave Sarah a hand by reviewing a play down there and also interviewing a few of the artists, and it was a real treat to sort of break out of my own routines and see something different, and that's what Fringe is all about. So I'm going to play for you two segments later in the show that relate to two different themes that some of the plays fall under. So it was kind of an interesting project. I'm glad to have done it, and you'll be able to hear those interviews coming up soon. But back to this band. So they're called Asteroid B612, and these are big guys. Well, at least the main songwriter, Johnny Spittles, was his name. He currently goes by in a solo project name by Johnny Cassino, and he's a very big man. I kind of like, you know, it kind of adds a little bit extra to a big heavy rock band when the guys are literally big and heavy. You know, I'm thinking of the Screaming Trees from Washington State, you know, with Mark Lanegan. You'll see pictures of them in the 90s. Mark Lanegan, who's tall, you know, himself, and then flanked by these huge, big guys. I think they were brothers. Who else? Called Tad, of course, that other great Seattle band. Very, very big man, as is the singer from this band we're going to play. So I can only imagine how visceral they must have been to see live, because the sound of the band is very large and heavy in a great straight-ahead rock and roll way. And yeah, Johnny Spittles is a big mountain of a man. And this album I actually picked up a couple of years ago at Scratch Records before they closed. Scratch Records is a great independent label here in the city, and they had a shop front for a while down on Hastings Street. And I picked up some great albums, some great Australian albums, and one of them was this one. So it's called Asteroid B612. That's the band. The record is called Reading Between the Lines. And I'm going to play for you four tracks from this. It's from the mid-90s. So they're a band from Australia. Sydney, in particular. And Sydney has that great heritage of Detroit-influenced rock and roll, stretching back to the Radio Birdman from the 70s. And this is one of those bands that sort of, you know took the baton and kept it going through the 90s. So, you know, real, you know, sound influenced by the Stooges, the Blue Oyster Cult, New York Dolls too, and sadly no longer with us. I think they probably lasted about 10 years as a band, Anyway, let's get into the music. So John Spittles is the songwriter. And another great thing about this record, it was produced by Kent Steedman of the Celibate Rifles, a very well-regarded Australian guitarist. So that adds a little bit extra punch to this album. So I've got the vinyl here with me right now. So fans of rock and roll, stay tuned, at least for the next 20-odd minutes. And you'll experience something kind of neat. So here we go. I'm going to play for you track number 2 and number 3 straight away. This track is called I Am the Problem from the band Asteroid B612 from Sydney, New South Wales.
If they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
Refreshing indeed. That's what I love about being able to host a show like this, playing playing what I think is great, including this band, Astro B612. Isn't that fabulous? That song in particular, that's one of my favorites, I think, from the mid-90s period of Australian rock and roll. That song was called September Crush. Stunningly awesome rock and roll song there. This is taken from a mid-90s album called Reading Between the Lines. The band is Astro B612, featuring John Spittles on guitar and vocals and songwriting duties there. He's now called Johnny Casino in his solo form, and I know he's still playing. I've seen YouTube clips of him. It's hard to kind of find actual music from him online, but I think I've found something. So maybe after two more tracks from Astro B612, I'll see if I can squeeze in a Johnny Casino track too to see what he's up to now. This is awesome stuff. Straight ahead, real Detroit kind of sounding rock and roll from Sydney, New South Wales. This band apparently imploded through. There was some thing that happened. They were on a tour in Europe and some scandalous thing happened and they broke up and never saw each other again. It was one of those kind of tragic kind of tales, I guess, that can tend to happen when a band is this intense and, you know, they really lived the lifestyle and the intensity and whatever interpersonal conflict created, this magic. They bottled it in record form very well on this record. And again, I mentioned it was produced by Kent Steedman of the Celibate Rifles. So that's another stellar thing about this collaboration. So let's get into two more tracks. Let's go to side B. I'm going to play for you Easy the Hard Way, and then Let It Slide. And thanks so much to Keith Parry from Scratch Records. I bought this at the Scratch Records shop before it closed down a couple of years ago, and it's been sitting on my to-do list to play it. So here we go. This is Astro B612 from Sydney, and two more tracks for you here on Stranded, the Australian-Canadian Music and Talk Show. We'll be right back.
darling, that I'm not to blame. But I'm left lamenting, you don't feel the same. Still I wait around and waste my time. You got me hooked, I'm on your line. I've seen you shine, but you're cold within. You'll find the problem when we're set to win.
This is BFM Greymaker. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
Thanks for tuning in. This is a show called Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music and talk show. We have presence online on a blog called ausstrandedradio.com with lots of interviews and record reviews and things there for you to check out in your own time. But otherwise, I hope you're able to tune in for the next hour. That was Johnny Casino and the Secrets. So I found what this gentleman is doing sort of currently. I mean, well, that track was 2008, which is kind of a long time ago, but it's a lot more recent than his heyday with the Asteroid B612 band. So I'm talking about Johnny Casino. That was Johnny Casino and the Secrets with a song called Cowboys and Indians, but he was previously known as Johnny Spittles when he was frontman of Asteroid B612, and I played for you from this vinyl I'm holding in my hands a couple of tracks from Side B there, Easy the Hard Way, and then Let It Slide. Wonderful stuff. The album's called Reading Between the Lines. I'm damned if I can tell what year it came out in. This is one of those bands that are just, you know, kind of a cult favorite and very little online. I can't even, on this album, it doesn't even say what year this came out, but I know it was the mid-90s. Wonderful heavy rock band, inspired by the Detroit rock and roll sound, and they're from Sydney. So there you go, Asteroid B612. Let's get into some new Australian music now. So I love it when folks email me. I'm going to play for you three acts now from three different people emailed me their music from all the way across the other side of the world, and I'm delighted to play it. There's three acts I'm going to play for you. First up, a band called The Badenvilles from Hobart, then another band called Here Comes the Cavalry, and the third band is going to be called Doc Holliday Takes the Shotgun. So first up, The Badenvilles, I'm pleased to say, are from Hobart, Tasmania, which is about as far away from here, I guess, as you could possibly imagine. It's Tasmania is a little island to the south in Australia. And Hobart is the capital city, very small place. And Gordy, let's see, a guy called Gordy sent me an email and said that he was from this band, The Badenvilles. Excuse me. He says, our sound is alternate rock with a bit of genre blending of punk and folk. And he said it would mean the world to me if you played this, and I'm happy to oblige. So here we go. This is a band called The Badenvilles from Hobart in Tasmania. The EP is called DIY. I'm going to play for you a track called, what do we play? It's called Country. And don't forget, we have a special coming up towards the second half of the show, all about the Vancouver Fringe Theatre, Fringe Theatre Festival. I went down and I've reviewed a play, and I've interviewed a few of the performers down there, and that was great fun. So that'll be up a little bit later on. So here we go. This is a band called The Badenvilles from Hobart.
Dreams, well, it turned against you, and now it's chewing you like some bone. That sweet love is now empty, and you're all alone. But you just keep begging. But you just keep begging for love that's been and gone, burnt by love's fire. It's just a flame that did not catch, and while the daylight it strips your desire, well, I've heard he's found his perfect match. But you just keep begging. But you just keep begging for love that's been and gone. And you know that in your heart that if you change, that it wouldn't really change a thing. So you go ahead and change, then act surprised. Your prison cell in which he holds the key, but that door is wide open. You refuse to set yourself free, but you just keep begging, but you just keep begging for love that's been and gone.
Told me all for time. Speed racer, he's a demon on wheel.
He's a demon and he's on the wheel.
Okay, three tracks in a row there. Brand new Australian music from three different individuals emailed me out of the blue and mentioned that they're making music and this is what they're playing. I'll tell you what we just played straight after this.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Scatulia, Talitin, Homasquim, Mustail.
Okay, so you're here on Stranded. So, as I mentioned, I played three acts there who emailed me from Australia with their music. First up was a band called the Badenvilles from Hobart in Tasmania. Thanks to Gordy for emailing me. And the second band there was From Perth, Western Australia. They're called Here Come the Cavalry. The song was called To the Ends of the World. And the last track there was really cool. Kind of a surf rock band. I think they're from Sydney. And the band is called Doc Holliday Takes the Shotgun. Yeah, really cool video clip, actually. It's a very unusual title. The song is called, I can't even pronounce it, A-O-K-I-G-A-H-A-R-A. Oikagara, maybe? Doc Holliday Takes a Shotgun. Yeah, a lot of work went into the film clip for that. It's kind of like, it's hard to explain, but, you know, one of those old Scalectric little race car sets that you could have as a kid, and that's kind of like the set, but in a big, they've expanded it. And anyway, it's really cool. So yeah, that band was called Doc Holliday Takes a Shotgun, a surf rock band. So thanks guys for messaging me. I'm looking forward to hearing what else you might send through. So if you're listening online, feel free to forward me your music. This is what we do here on the station. We play music that folks would otherwise maybe not hear. We like to educate our listeners. This is Stranded, the Australian-Canadian Music and Talk Show. Now for something completely different. Fringe Theatre is the 30th anniversary of the Fringe Theatre Festival in Vancouver. And thanks to Sarah Lapsley, I went down over this past week and recorded a little special that I contributed to the Arts Report show here, which airs on Wednesdays at 5 p.m. So Sarah sent out a list of themes for contributors to kind of do little podcasts about, because if you've got a whole bunch of plays happening, there'll be some themes that stick out. And so the two that I chose were failure and quitting, and the second one was dating. So for instance, there were three plays this year all about dating, and I watched one of them, and I've reviewed that, and I chatted to one of the other performers over the phone. So I'll play you the special now. It's all there. All the information that you need. Let's do the one on dating first. So what's cool here is actually there's an extra little interview at the end I did with a fantastic gentleman named Jem Rolls. Now he is a Fringe Theatre veteran, a British guy, very, very witty. And I first saw him perform about 5 years ago when I was in Edmonton, Alberta, at the Edmonton Fringe, which is the best in the country. And it just blew me away. It kind of changed my life in a way, seeing just this, you know, wonderful, free-thinking self-expression. And this guy has basically made a living from it for years. He does the circuit every year in Canada. But he's from Britain, and I chatted with him. I spotted him in the walking around, and I recognized him from 5 years ago, and I just walked up and said, Jem, would you like to chat? And he did. He let me have 10 minutes with him after his show. We had a beer. And so that's a little bonus interview at the end of this piece. But first, this is a piece that I produced for the Arts Report here. It's about dating. That's the theme of the place. One of them that I saw. Anyway, so here we go. Hi there, and welcome to another podcast in the CITR Radio Arts Report series for the 30th Annual Vancouver Fringe Festival. The theme of this episode is dating. The world of dating is fraught with wonderful growth experiences, but also tragic mishaps, and it's not surprising that over the years, many of the creative minds that have entered the Fringe Theatre world have decided to dissect their dating experiences with equal parts flair and satire. This year is no exception, with three plays tackling this theme. Gary Has a Date, Deranged Dating, and Dirty Old Women. You will learn about two of these plays in particular today, Deranged Dating, with my brief review of the play, and also Gary Has a Date, with my interview with Emily Windler, creator of the play. We'll conclude the podcast with a bonus interview with Fringe Theatre veteran Jem Rolls, who I met in passing on the festival grounds last night. He gives us some great insight into the magic of Fringe Theatre. I saw Deranged Dating at the review stage last night and I thoroughly enjoyed the play. A vibrant comic named Shirley Kirchman has come all the way from South Africa to present a madcap 60 minutes of intensely physical comedy, which leans heavily on her own life experience. Here is her description of the play from the Fringe Theatre website. "Hi, I'm Shirley Kirchman, and after 17 years of serial monogamy, I found myself 35 and single. This is my true story about my year-long elusive search for love. Meet my concerned family, my bizarre dates, and the terrifying matchmaker. A hilarious fusion of stand-up skits and absurd storytelling. I think Shirley is captivating and hilarious the whole way through the performance, as she self-deprecatingly portrays the dating experience through a series of skits based on experiences as unlikely as a man texting her his penis photo after the first date, and even a man bringing his mother on date. She has some truly remarkable one-liners that cut to the core of some of the absurdity of the modern dating scene, which of course includes the murky world of internet dating. Shirley keeps the audience's attention with skillful use of costume changes, where she takes on the role of her doting mother and also an obnoxious operator of a dating agency. The addition of a tragic interpretive dance on the vicissitudes of the dating experience, I think deranged dating is certainly a fine example of physical comedy, which Fringe Theatre seems to excel at, as Jem Rowles will reiterate in his upcoming interview. My only criticism is I didn't walk away feeling I'd learnt any real pearls of wisdom about how to be more effective at the dating experience myself. Although if you do listen closely, you'll hear Shirley's mother's character bluntly stating that commitment, pain and suffering are all part of growing up, and let's face it, dating can no doubt bring us face to face with our fears around these things. I give Deranged Dating 4 stars. You can catch Shirley Kirchman in Deranged Dating Saturday, 13th of September at 9:15 p.m. and Sunday, 14th of September at 5 p.m. at the Review Stage. Gary Has a Date is another satirical one-woman play about the dating world. While I haven't had the chance to see this play yet, I caught up with playwright and performer Emily Windler this afternoon, and she will tell you now what to expect if you decide to check out the play.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
No problem at all. As I mentioned earlier, I haven't had a chance yet to see your play, but I'm very intrigued because it fits into the theme of today's dating theme. And I'm wondering how you fit in, because I did see a one-woman dating play last night. What are you bringing to the theme of dating at this festival?
Well, this play is all about the preparation of a first date. It is a one-woman man show. I play a man named Gary, and it's a physical comedy, so it's a very physically silly look at trying to get ready for a date and trying to make sure that everything goes right, but of course everything goes really wrong.
As often happens in real life, so we can relate
in the audience. Exactly, exactly. So it's really a look at Gary, who is a bit of a hopeless romantic in the way that, you know, he's not so smooth with the ladies, but he really wants to find someone special, and he's finally snagged a date. So he's trying to go by the book, quite literally, because he's a man of science, and so he's really trying to look at it as a formula of how to have a date go just right, and he, of course, gets in his own way.
Of course, it's quite self-defeating when, you know, love is all about the heart, not the head, I guess. So interesting,
yeah,
interesting
exactly.
Premise, yeah.
And the show is, it's in the style of physical comedy, mainly because I love that style, and I grew up watching a lot of the men physical comics such as Peter Sellers and Don Knotts and Mr. Bean, all that kind of comedy, and so this really falls into that style.
And Fringe is just the perfect avenue, I guess, for this kind of expression. Physical comedy, you just put everything into it.
Yeah, definitely. And audience, it's been really fun here in Vancouver. It's been fun playing this for the audience, and you know, I think. People see a lot of themselves in what happens to Gary. I think everybody does, because everybody has stuff that goes wrong completely out of their control when they really, it's really something that they want to go just right, especially when it comes to, you know, dating and romance. And so I think even though it's really, really silly, I think a lot of times people can see themselves in what's going on, which of course makes people laugh. So
misinterpretations, I think that's where a lot of people get stuck.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm curious too. I mean, you made a conscious choice to dress as a man and become Gary. Did you base much of this on observing men, or was it maybe through male friends who told you about their mishaps, or was it sort of a mixture of both, or from completely the imagination?
You know, it's kind of just completely from the imagination. I don't have this, a grand scheme of looking into the psyche of the male dating perspective. I really just actually found the character first. I found this great character that just ended up being quite silly, but you know, very lovable, and just sort of happened to be this guy named Gary. And then and so it was sort of, I wanted to see this character struggle in the dating world. So it's actually kind of just from imagination. And the more I do it, the more I think it's actually based on myself more than I would like it to be, probably. Yeah, so it's mostly from the imagination and just trying to live out this date as it would happen to this character, and that's kind of how I created the show.
Hmm. Well, it's an excellent concept, and now, yeah, I do definitely see the value in this, and different to what I saw last night. Deranged Dating, very good, but she was playing herself completely. You've stepped into a different created world, so that's brilliant.
Yeah, I really enjoy. I love both types of theater. You know, I love that the storytelling, the intimate storytelling theater, where you can see, you can hear the story firsthand from a person, which can be which Fringe often offers a lot of that great perspective. You know, you get a glimpse into some world that normally you wouldn't really get a glimpse in. I have a special love for the type of theater that is very transformative, and I definitely like the challenge of playing characters that look completely different from myself, and people can kind of escape and go somewhere totally different with their imaginations.
Hmm. Well, thanks very much. I certainly look forward to watching this. This is Gary Has a Date, and so it's playing at the Vancouver Fringe Festival, and still on. We have tonight at 7:45 p.m. Saturday at 9:35 p.m. and Sunday at 1:15 p.m.
That's right, and it's at the Waterfront Theater. So I look forward to the final three shows here at the festival.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Emily.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots, global, unembedded, international, independent news hour, and this is CITR 101.9 FM.
Now it's time for our bonus interview. Last night, while I was walking around the grounds on Granville Island, I spotted the long, lanky appearance of Jem Rolls, a very witty man. Jem is a Fringe Theatre veteran. I first saw him perform at the Edmonton Fringe Theatre Festival a number of years ago, and he was my very first Fringe Theatre experience. I knew he'd be a great person to talk to. I caught up with him right after his performance. We shared a beer at the bar, and this is what he had to say about Fringe Theatre. You are a veteran. What does Fringe Theatre mean to you? Why have you committed so much of your life to it?
Well, it's the best, I mean, quite possibly the only way of practicing my art. I mean, I don't really fall into any categories. I don't really get on with establishments and establishment people and that kind of clicky-clacky, you know, game that people have to play to get on it anywhere. Well, there's none of that. This is the most no-bullshit way of performing there is, apart from, you know, some press in the book, which is all, you know, you get lucky and unlucky with press, and some press is bullshit, but really, it's a bit, for the arts world, it's very free, do whatever the hell you like. I don't have to fall into any category, I don't have to fall into any genre. So I get, you know, it's a performance poetry show, but I get more physical every year. I learn loads and loads of the clowns. I learn various things, lots of Australian clowns, actually. And that's you know, that fun of just going for the physicality and the facialness and vocal play. You just, there is so much more you can do with, in a sort of theatrical world, with poetry than with the shriveled expectations that lots of people in the proper poetry world have. I don't have to think about those. I don't think about the limits, the lack of limits. I don't just do what the hell I like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I intend to do exactly what the hell I like. You know, it's an awful lot of work. It's a risk. There's no guaranteed fees. And, you know, and I could easily do a tour next year which fails and I'll end up broke. So, you know, it's in a sense, it's scary stuff. And, you're flying by the seat of your pants. It's a, you know, it's a long tightrope that you walk. But it is really, really free. And in a sense, the Fringe Tour is, in some ways, it's the last refuge of the outlying mavericks of the aesthetic world. And it is, you know, it's what these people are like. You know, or it's people who came into performing late. It's quite a bit of that, because I did. Martin Dockery did, for instance, which is marvellous. And, so this is, in a sense, that, yeah, you've never gone through that whole process that people go through in their 20s, because I never started performing until I was 31. And it is, but you know, I can't stress enough, it's really, you know, I like the life and I like the travelling. I mean, I like some of the cities much more than others. Some of the cities I don't really like at all, yeah? Mm. But, you know, lots of the places you do see them at their best, you know, and I quite like Winnipeg actually, but for the 2 weeks of the festival, it's bloody marvellous, you know, and no one ever calls it marvellous the rest of the year, I can tell you. So, in a sense, it's cheap mass theatre. That's the appeal, and I think, you know, cheap times mass equals plenty as far as I'm concerned, and that's the essential equation of it. Of course, if there's more than one of you, if there's more than two of you, you know, it's probably too cheap. Yeah. Mm. But for one person, it's fine. Yeah. And also it means people take risks. You know, I'm a poetry show, and trying to sort of develop across the tour and make people come and see a show. Well, if it's $10, people take a risk with $10. Mm. You know, you know, if you're going to go to a proper theatre at $40. Well, you're going to pay a bit more care to what you do, where people can and do walk out of a show, love that show, and straight into another show, quite possibly knowing nothing about it whatsoever. And and that's the glorious thing. That's the beast that we're in.
Hmm. And you are pretty much constantly on the road, would you say?
No. I only do the Canadian tours, and I did Orlando. But just four months of the year, really. And it was a bit like, you know, you spend the winter, it's like an old-fashioned circus, because there's a lot of old-fashioned, you know, we are a first old-fashioned circus wagon train, just with some old wagons, yeah, to be honest. But, you know, like, you know, circus people, they spend the winter making their new tricks and making their costumes for next year. And, you know, well, in a sense, it's a bit like that with, you know, devising a show. And, yeah, and devising a show is generally the tough bit, because, you know, doing this is loads of fun. I mean, I just had a dream of an hour of the show. It's really, really good fun indeed, yeah? It's not always some fun. Sometimes it's like hauling yourself from treacle, yeah. Mm. But it's loads of it's loads of fun, really.
And you did describe quite well the lifestyle of Fringe and how it is different to other forms of entertainment. How about stand-up comedy? I mean, theoretically, there could be Jem Rolls, the stand-up comedian, in that profession, in that world.
Yeah,
are those two worlds separate?
Well, I don't really want to do that. Well, it's a grim world, comedy. It's a bit joyless, it always seems to me. And, stand-up comedy is a serious business. It's not a funny business at all. You know, if you do well, you do really fucking well. And if you don't do well, you're all your ass in every toilet in London for 400 quid a night before you give up.
Yeah.
So, and also, I don't like the idea of being funny all the time.
Mm.
It's kind of, it's kind of maddening, really. Who wants to be funny, funny all the time? That's what you have to be.
Yeah.
Lots of stand-up comedians with a lot of really intelligent, talented people. And it seems quite a narrow stature, just a straight jacket aware. And I really can do what the hell I like. I mean, I have to make sure that the show is substantially funny. I mean, I think never less than 60% for what I do in this world that we're in. But then I like the... this year's show is probably 85% funny. So, but that's just the way it worked out, yeah? You know, it's one of those things I do find it easier and easier to be funny with the passing years. But it's still tough to... like I say, I find it easier and easier.
Easier to be funny?
Definitely.
Really?
Funny, yeah. And, lots of things I think about for years, and then... Well, on the other hand, you know, there are still loads of jokes in the show that no one's laughed at yet, and I'm confident that before Sunday when the last show is, that I'll actually finally eventually make the fuckers laugh, yeah?
Can you have you thought of why you think it is easier now to be funny, or is it just because the world's crazier? Or is
I don't know.
It, it's well, just a craft.
I once read it. I saw a poet saying that if poets spend too long on stage, they turn into comedians.
Oh.
So the more time you spend on stage, the easier it is to be funny. I think it's probably a, there's a fair rule in there, yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, and also, you know, just because I get better at the just gestures and faces and the whole physical clowning, yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, stuff a lot of people performance poetry is just voice. They're just text and voice, and they don't really do much with the voice. You know, it's just one level voice.
Mm.
And I think it's text, voice, face and body.
Yep.
And, you know, all those things to be gone for. And if you're on a stage, it also allows you to do that. Sometimes you've got quite nifty lighting rigs, so you can really go for it.
Mm-hmm. So tonight I actually went to see a play called Deranged yep. Dating. Is there anything you wanted to say off the top of your head about the world of dating?
No, but I did. I had a real day yesterday. I got thrown out of my billet at 10 o'clock in the morning by my irate billet because I took a girl back there on Saturday night. It's actually 9 years. Since I've sort of taken a girl back to a billet, yeah, unannounced. So she threw me out at 10 o'clock in the morning. And then at the same time, I have two ex-stalkers, and both ex-stalkers, yet the same day this happened yesterday, Facebook me totally out of the blue, even though I'm not friends with them. All on the same day. If that sounded like it's a bit weird, well, you know what, folks? That's a bit weird. Yeah. So that was my day yesterday. So that's quite dating. And I've got to hope that Trina shows up quite soon, the reason why I got thrown out, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah.
Well, presumably those stalkers are a long, long way away, so I'm sure you're safe here in Vancouver.
One of them's probably on the island right now, mate.
Okay.
I was the ex-stalkers.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the voice of Jem Rowles. He is an outstanding British spoken word artist, and he has a show called Jem Rowles Attacks the Silence at the Vancouver Fringe Festival. You can find more information about the times there at vancouverfringe.com. And you can also find more information about the three plays on dating, the theme of this podcast. We have Gary Had a Date, Deranged Dating, and Dirty Old Woman, all at the Vancouver Fringe Festival, still on for the remainder of this weekend. My name is Matt Granlund, and this has been a podcast special for the Arts Report on CITR 101.9 FM.
I'll be your wingman. Even if it means me taking a chubby, I will suck it up.
CITR has always been your ultimate wingman, for when you have the ladies back at your place, or whatever.
There you have it. That's the first podcast I did for the Arts Report. Thanks, Sarah Lapsley, for giving me the opportunity to do that. It was a lot of fun. The Arts Report airs on Wednesdays. Here's a little information about that show.
This week on the Arts Report, film, theater, dance, books, visual art, and more. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m., the Arts Reporters explore what's fun, fascinating, campy, or critical in the Vancouver art scene. You can find bonus content on our Mixcloud, Facebook, and Twitter. Got an idea for a review, interview, or original production? Email arts@citr.ca. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or anytime on citr.ca.
Okay, so now it's time for the second piece that I put together. The first piece was about the theme of dating, and the next piece is on the theme of failure and quitting. So we have another interview with a playwright named Al LaFrance. He's from Montreal. So let's get into it right now, and African Rhythms will be up after this. It does go for about 20 minutes, so this will run to the remainder for the remainder of the show. So again, the Vancouver Fringe Festival is still on, and you can find them at vancouverfringe.com with all the information about the times. So here we go. Here is the second podcast that I put together for the Arts Report. This is about failure and quitting.
This is Basha Bilat, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I'm a loser, I'm a loser, I
and I'm not what I appear to be. Of all the love I have won or have lost, there is one love I should never have crossed. She was a girl in a million, my friend. I should have known she would win in the end. I'm a loser.
Hello and welcome to a podcast special for the Arts Report on CITR 101.9 FM, especially for the 2014 Vancouver Fringe Festival. The words failure and quitting may mean different things to many different people, but one thing must be true. Everyone has faced failure and very likely quitting at some point in their lives. In the background is playing the song I'm a Loser by the Beatles. It's a song about romantic rejection, and music critic Richie Untberger believes it goes further to speak of hypocrisy, of keeping up a happy face when your world is falling down. So even Lennon and McCartney, seemingly at the verge of having the world at their feet in 1965, could relate to a crushing sense of failure and articulate it well in song. Another person who has sought to make sense of what failure and quitting means is Montreal-based spoken word artist Al LaFrance, who is bringing his one-man show called The Quitter to the Vancouver Fringe Festival. As his press release states, quitting and failing aren't synonymous, although they can both be equally hilarious. Montreal funny man Al LaFrance tells tales of giving up and messing up in his solo show. Dollars to Donuts, this one's a must-see for lovers of comedy and storytelling. Al was inspired to create his show after taking stock of his life and realizing that quitting and failure were concurrent themes throughout his life. I spoke with Al this week so that listeners can get a sense of what to expect if they decide to check out his show. So, here is Al LaFrance right now.
A show. I've been doing storytelling for a while, and I just started picking through which stories I like the most, and I started putting them together, and I saw that the overall pattern of my life is that I constantly start things and then quit them. So I figured I would make a show out of it. And I try to really, find the difference between quitting and failing, because I don't think those two necessarily go together. Some of my failures have involved quitting. But a lot of my quits were actually great successes, I find. So that's kind of the angle that I take with the show.
What is the crucial distinction between quitting and failing, do you think?
Well, I think failing is when you're doing something and you've exhausted every possible option to make that thing work, and then it just doesn't work, and then you give up. That might have failed. But if you're just in a situation, like if you're working at a job that you don't like, and it's, you know, it might be because it's too hard or it might just not be for you, and you just quit that, that's not a failure. That's a step forward. I've dropped out of college three times. And I would say one of those was a failure, and two of them were legitimate quits. The first time I went to college, I really didn't know why I was there. I hadn't figured out, like, I didn't have a career path in mind or anything like that. So I just picked a program that seemed vague to me that might be interesting. I started doing that. And when I quit that, it was a good move because I was finally thinking that I might have a better idea of what I wanted to do. So I never considered my college dropout to be a failure so much as just me stepping back and actually taking stock of my life and trying to figure out what I should actually be doing.
That's right, because we have so many pressures in our world.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely still a lot of stigma just by saying, like, dropout. It sounds like a dirty word when you're saying, oh, yeah, I've dropped out of college. Like, I've completely given up on higher education. And that's not what it is at all, right? It's the way that the school system works. I mean, it's not really built for everybody. You can learn a hell of a lot by not being in school just as much as you can learn by being in school. It's just it's a matter of, life experience versus classroom experience, and those are very different things, but they both teach you quite a bit, you know.
Absolutely. And I was thinking about the idea of courage, that what you're doing right now, that takes a lot of courage for an individual to get up and do a one-man show about a topic like this that's not common. And do you think that if you hadn't quit, a lot of things and gone through the tribulations of that you would have had the courage to even do what you're doing now? If you just stuck at the in a little box, you never would have got out of it?
I mean, if I hadn't started quitting things that I didn't enjoy, I never would have found the things that I do enjoy, right? And I only discovered storytelling on stage because I had just quit so many things and I had nothing to do and I wanted to try new things, right? And that's the other main thing about this show, is that it's all about getting out there and having new experiences, right? So if I had not, you know, quit jobs and found myself with a lot of time on my hands, I never would have found the time to try out the stage and write a show. 3 years ago, I decided I was going to do a show. And then 1 year ago, I bothered to start actually putting it on paper. So I started, last September, I started writing it. And then I went through a bunch of drafts over the course of 9 months where I would just start writing and then like put it aside and try some things and go back to it. And I started doing it. The first time I did it was in June. I didn't do any workshopping or anything. I just tried to do it at the Montreal Fringe, and it went pretty well. It just picked up from there, right? So now I will have done it. At the end of Vancouver, I would have done it 40 times in 3 months. I could give you the opening story of 3 minutes. I could give you that if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. Take it away, Al.
I was raised in a small town called Aylmer in Quebec. Population was about 35,000 when I was there. It was a beautiful little place filled with parks and woods and squirrels, endless garage sales all summer, kids playing hockey in the streets all winter. But it also featured one beach, two strip clubs, three strip malls, four bars, and five golf courses. Five. I mean, we were a golf-based suburbia. Now, I was never really good at any sports growing up. I was horrible at baseball, terrible at basketball. Absolutely loved playing hockey, but could not skate to save my life. I once managed to skate over my own hand, and I nicked a nerve in my right index finger, and I lost feeling in that finger from that point on. So hockey was absolutely out of the question. And I was and am absolutely terrible at golf. So I knew I'd never grow up to play in the Masters tournament or anything, but the multitude of golf courses that surrounded me at any given point, they opened a door to something else, something wonderful that didn't take all day to do, mini golf. Now, there are three mini golf courses in Aylmer. Two of them had the same standardized, boring course that you find everywhere else, but the third one was by far my favorite. It was absolutely unique in its design, and it was conveniently located right next to my house, and it was called the Maxi Putt. Now, the Maxi Putt, it was a masterpiece of tiny golf architecture. It was impossible to properly prepare for a game there, nearly impossible to play one without just getting progressively frustrated as you did so. Its holes were strange mazes filled with traps and rotting wood and asphalt that made your ball bounce uncontrollably, and there were ponds that surrounded many of the course's borderless holes. Now, I absolutely loved playing this course because all these obstacles, they rendered everybody equally terrible, which meant that I was just as good at this as anybody else. And it felt good to be equal for once, but I wanted more. I wanted to beat everybody. I kind of needed to. So one summer when I was about 11 years old, I swore to, and I knew just how to do it. So there was a 19th hole on this course, and if you got a hole in one there, you'd be granted a free game. So every time I played, I would scour through the ponds and gather up the golf balls that other golfers inevitably lost. And that way, whenever I reached the 19th hole, I'd be granted multiple opportunities at this quote-unquote hole-in-one. So I got really good at that. I played almost every single day, and I won free games every single time. I started to find the weak spots in all the holes, the little tear in the carpet that made your ball bounce over the awkwardly shaped rock, or the markings on the giant spinning wheel that made it possible to plan your ball's flight pattern if you landed it just right. I learned every inch of that course, and by the end of the summer, I was a pro. So one day I finally did it. I shot a 51, which is 21 shots under par. And when I showed my score sheet to the owner, he declared it to be the greatest game that anybody had ever played on that course. Now, not too long after that, the whole golf course was torn apart and rebuilt, but without its Maxi Putt component. But in the time between my victory and the golf course's demise, nobody beat my score, which means that I am and forever will be the undefeated, undisputed, uncontested champion of Maxi Putt. And why do I have that title? It's because I never quit.
That's wonderful.
There you go. It's the only non-quitting story that I have.
Ah, okay. Well, it's good to leave on a good note there, because there is redemption
yeah,
in the play as well. That was wonderful. And I should say, I should give one of my quitting stories that came up when I was listening to that. You mentioned the, was it a skating accident that you sort of cut your hand?
Yeah.
I'm from Australia, and believe it or not, we have a ski hill there. Well, a few, not many. And as you can imagine, towards the end of winter, it's warm. It's already warm in Australia. And I went skiing once, and it was so warm, I didn't even bother to wear gloves. And I'm hurtling down this hill in a terrible amateur skiing way, tripped and fell, and sliced my finger on the edge of the ski. And there was blood gushing out onto the snow. And so that was the biggest failure, one of my biggest failures in life in terms of physical activity. So I relate to your story.
I have a good story that involves blood in my show, but I really can't tell you about it or it spoils.
Okay.
But there's definitely a good injury quitting story in there.
Okay, well, I think injuries are a good reason to quit, because once you see some
generally,
blood,
yes.
Yeah, blood sort of changes the game. Well, thanks so much, Al. And any other words of advice?
You know, a lot of people say that it's kind of like a catchphrase now. People say that you should fail fast, and I think that there's no pressure on you to fail at any given rate. But when you realize that you're in a situation that you shouldn't be in anymore, it's totally good to get out of it. So you should always try to be in a better place.
Well, thank you, Al.
Thanks. Have a good one.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, Daily Grassroots Global Unembedded International Independent News Hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
The Quitter, starring Al LaFrance, runs from Thursday 4th of September until Sunday 14th of September at Studio 1398 at the Vancouver Fringe Festival. You can buy tickets online at www.vancouverfringe.com, and you can find more information on Al LaFrance at his website, al-lafrance.com. Partial proceeds from this production will go to the Greater Vancouver Food Bank Society. I'm really glad that Al has courageously tackled this subject for his one-man show. And dear listener, I'm sure that if you view the play, you will walk away with a fresh perspective on the internal dialogue you have around your own less-than-stellar life experiences. I can say for myself that I feel like a failure right now for having neglected to purchase a September bus pass on time, and I was ticketed at the SkyTrain station for more money than I can afford to pay right now. But I don't have to quit. There is an appeal process that I will engage with, so stay tuned, dear listener. My name is Matt Granlund, and I'm the host of Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music and talk show on CITR 101.9 FM, Fridays at 6 p.m. You can find the blog to the show online at ozstrandedradio.com. This has been a special for the Arts Report on CITR Radio for the Vancouver Fringe Festival 2014. We started with a song by a British band about failure. So let's finish up on a more positive note with another British band singing about positivity in the face of life's realities and perhaps failures. The single Live Forever by Oasis is 20 years old this year. Noel Gallagher wrote the song in his hometown of Manchester while working a mundane job in a storeroom after injuring himself at a worksite. May you live forever, dear listener, and remember, never quit.
Australia and Canada are both countries with a whole lot of space to create some of the wildest sounds on the planet. Join your host Matthew as he explores the musical heritage of his native Australia and features fresh sounds from Canada's independent music world. That's Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show, live Fridays from 6 to 7:30 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM. And I'm stranded on my own.
I went to residential school. I was just 8 years old.
Gayla Kassler, my name is Gennargio O'Sullivan of the Tlaalitsis Nation, originally from Turner Island. You're listening to Wendell exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools.
Jason Whitebear is one of our youngest panelists. He is a residential school survivor.
Gakia Waku Maganak, Nadi, Wendin Naganag. I said all my relations in three different languages. Those languages were taken away and given with this one here that I've mastered in residential school. And they told me that once you go there, he says, you're not going to come home with this anymore. You're not going to come home being able to speak Nehewewen. You're not going to be able to speak. But when you do go, what I want you to do is I want you to try and master everything that they give you, so that they can never fool us anymore. In my generation, we're at the point now where we understand the nuances between the languages. We can say, bonjour, Anin. I wish I knew a little bit of Arab, but you know, the point being is that we're all sitting around here, and we're very learned people, we're very knowledgeable. We know how to say, to say a little bit of each other's language nowadays, and that's just us as this language. And I think that's a direct result of residential school, is because we always ask each other, where are you from? Well, how do you say this? How do you say that? So that when you run into somebody else, you're allowed to respect them and say, Tanse, how? Bonjour, Anin. So regardless of what was taken away from me during my residential school formative years, I haven't lost the ability to see. And so it is with this that I thank each and every one of you. I'd like to say, Ninanaskamun, Gakyogi Gwayotsiwa Taaski, and that's Cree for I'm grateful for everything in this land. I had to learn that from a kukum, because I was speaking in front of chiefs one time and I said, I can't speak the language. So she taught me that little bit. Ninanaskamotuman gak yogi guayotsi wataski. Hi, hi. Thank you.
You have just heard At Window exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools. Both my mother and I attended St. Michael's Residential School in Alert Bay, BC. This is a part